This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas, powered by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning, and this is the Breakfast Grill. Global supply chain shortages, soaring freight rates, manpower constraints, port congestions, insufficient containers, lack of landing rights, and border closures have been the challenges that transport and logistic companies have had to navigate whilst dealing with the pandemic. We speak to one of the world's leaders in this field, Geodis, which registered close to 11 billion euro globally revenue last year. In the studio is Venkateswaran Laxmana, its sub-regional managing director of Southeast Asia. Venkat, good morning to you. This question is on everyone's mind. We all want to know if the worst is over for supply chain disruptions, or are things actually going to get worse?
Good morning, Xiaoning, and I'm happy that you have me on the show today. I would say from a supply chain perspective for companies like us, it's an evolving situation. The worst is over is what we believe. But there are developments in different geographies, different parts of the world every now and then, and that keep posing challenges to the players like us. But I think, by and large, the things are under control.
So the perfect storm that we saw a few months ago, I mentioned some of those constraints. But I wanted to know, and maybe you can tell us, why did it all happen at the same time?
It's a combination of many things, because the pandemic created a lot of disruption in terms of capacity in the market, leading to also people being displaced in different geographies, leading to a kind of imbalance between supply and demand, and recently, thanks to the Russia Ukraine situation, the oil price has also kind of gone up. So I think from a timing point of view, everything is almost like happened one after the other in the right sequence, leading to soaring costs.
So how has Geodis navigated this? How have you kept your operations in Southeast Asia going despite all these challenges?
Geodis is very aware of the rising inflation, ongoing disruptions on and off in this part of the world, and the challenges, especially to the labor markets in many of our countries that is posing to our contract logic customers, especially. If you take Malaysia, for example, the way we have addressed that is by creating a multimodal solution. We introduced a lot of investment in the road infrastructure and the air hub. So what it has done, it's provide the customers an option in term based on the transit time requirements, whether they want to choose air direct or they want to choose a combination of road and air or ocean and air. So that's in a way kind of helped our customers to also optimize their cost based on the transit time and their SLA requirement with their end customers.
Okay, so you've given them more choices in terms of how to get their goods to the final destination. But I want to know, do you think is the current biggest challenge that Geodis continues to face, even if some of these pressures have eased? Now, McKinsey and Company, in a recent report, said that manpower shortages is probably the biggest hurdle that transport and logistic companies are facing. Do you agree? I mean, their point is logistics isn't considered a very sexy profession.
Okay. Globally, I think I agree to that statement. But that, coming down to Southeast Asia, the two countries where we feel the most impact is in Singapore and Malaysia, because we have a lot of foreign workers working in some of the blue-collar jobs, and that's where we felt, So what we have gone ahead is we did two things, actually, in the last couple of years. We've automated a lot of the warehousing activities, which has made us less reliant on some of the workforce as in the past. And also through a combination of better planning based on with our customer volumes, we introduced a very seamless planning with the customers, which has helped us tide over the requirements of manpower over this peak season and off season. So that's how we managed it. In many places, we've also introduced an additional shift to our warehousing activities, especially now that the borders are open and people are able to work out of the facilities. So that's kind of helped us ease some of this labor shortages that we faced during the pandemic.
Now, specifically to Malaysia, have you had conversations with the government with regards to allowing more migrant workers to come and work in your hubs?
We haven't done at this point of time, because I think we are sufficiently resourced, Kuala Lumpur as well as in Johor, where we have large facilities providing warehousing activities. For the traditional freight forwarding, of course, as I said, we have introduced a multiple range of services to ease the capacity constraints in the market and also ensure that we not only offered standardized solution to our customers, but also some of the custom tailor-made so that the customer then has an option to choose between his their transit time requirements and the price point that they want to pay.
Is the disruption then particularly acute in air freight? Because what I do know is there's currently very tight capacity, right? So the International Air Transport Association already says that air cargo volume grew by 7% last year. So how is this segment operating on the back of this new hub that you talk about in Kuala Lumpur, which serves as a consolidation center, I believe, for goods manufactured in China, Malaysia and Vietnam?
Yeah. See, what we have done over the last couple of years is, and the pandemic, in a sense, has pushed us to accelerate some of the decision that we already had in mind. We set up the hub in Kuala Lumpur, in Clear facility, purely because we feel that from a Southeast Asia point of view, it's quite strategic and it has good connections between Southeast Asia and North Asian countries. We've also partnered with some of our airlines in terms of specific arrangement for increasing capacity, whether in block space or otherwise. And as I said, we also introduce a range of services, whether it's called AirFlex or AirFast or AirSafe, which combines with our road network, which we have been expanding. It's the road network, again, is both scheduled and non-scheduled. It emanates out of Singapore and ends in Vietnam. So that the connectivity that this strategic hub provides, both in terms of the road transport and the air transport, has helped us tide over some of the capacity constraints that we saw in the Southeast Asian region. And it's also helped us grow grow at the same pace as the market.
Your investment in Malaysia, was it purely driven by our country's geographical advantages, or were there other incentives offered to you to actually encourage Geodis to start the hub here?
No, currently I think it's more the strategic location of Malaysia and its connectivity, which led us taking the decision a few years back. And we just implemented it in the perfect timing because in 2020, and it helped us in terms of then tide over the crisis during the pandemic. And to add to what I said, the other thing is also the fact that if from Malaysia, almost 80% of the destinations has a direct connectivity. So that also has helped us in terms of taking that strategic decision and putting the air hub in Malaysia.
Are there plans for expansion, or because it's just started, you're going to see how things progress?
Geodis is continuously expanding in APAC and specifically in Southeast Asia over the last couple of years, and that will continue because we are growing quite at a rapid pace in almost all the products in the sub-region, and that's kind of helping us also in taking some of those decision faster in terms of hastening some of the investments.
So I'm curious then, which countries in Southeast Asia actually offer Geodis the most opportunities you're most excited about?
I think, to me, Malaysia and Vietnam are the two, I would say from an opportunity point of view, are the two biggest countries for Geodis in Southeast Asia. But of course, there are countries like Singapore and Thailand being strategically located, both from a manufacturing perspective and from a redistribution perspective, which is also growing at quite a healthy rate.
So I did observe from parent company SNCF, their annual report, it did report 207 million euro revenue last year for this region, for Southeast Asia. So I'm just curious, what kind of volume growth can we expect this year? Last year, the entire group grew by 28%. This is Geodis Global. Will Southeast Asia do better than that?
All I can say is, as I'm not privy to talk about regional and local numbers, we are growing quite aggressively and we are quite confident that we will do better than last year.
Okay, and what is the catalyst though? Is it the growth of e-commerce in the region like what we saw in United States and Europe? What's driving your optimism?
Until the acquisition of Keppel, our presence in e-commerce in sub-region was not there. We've been primarily focusing on freight forwarding, contract logistics, basically providing the warehousing and domestic transportation services. But of course, Southeast Asia is a growing market from an e-commerce perspective over the last 2 years. And the amount of global trade that passes through this sub-region is almost close to 3.4 trillion. And large part of our solutions and services that we've introduced over the last couple of years is to ensure that it takes care of the boom in the e-commerce segment, which means that, you know, we have accelerated our investment on the B2B segment. From there, you know, the last mile kicks in. But with the acquisition of Keppel, of course, this will also give us a platform to expand our B2C network in the sub-region. And as you have must have heard, we've just consummated the deal on the 1st of July. So we are still working out in the plans to ensure that, you know, we take care of our customer challenges and need in the sub-region.
Okay, I did a bit of digging, and Keppel Logistics before its sale was actually a loss-making enterprise to the tune of 5 million Sing dollars or thereabouts, and you acquired it for, if I'm not wrong, 80 million. So can this business be turned around? I mean, what was the synergy that you really see going for Keppel Logistics?
I'm not allowed to speak about the transaction part of the deal, but certainly I can talk about what will it do, this acquisition do to the Southeast Asian region. As I said, we are very strong in freight forwarding in Southeast Asia, and we wanted to increase our footprints in the warehousing and the cross-border transportation segment. This acquisition will certainly give us more footprints, more so in Singapore and Malaysia, because of the addition of new warehouses to the existing high-tech facilities that we already have in these countries. And more importantly, the facilities at strategic locations in Southeast Asia connected through the cross-border road network that we've introduced a couple of years back is only going to help our customers move their transport their goods more efficiently.
On the breakfast grill this morning is Venkateswaran Lakshmanan, the sub-regional managing director of Southeast Asia at Geodis. After the break, can a transport and logistics company be sustainable or even carbon zero? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to the Breakfast Grill. In the hot seat this morning is Venkateswaran Lakshmanan, the sub-regional managing director of Southeast Asia at Geodis. Just before the break, is the worst over for supply chain disruptions? Venkat, I want to know why Geodis in this region chooses certain vertical markets, right? Why are you all focusing on retail, FMCG, industrial, automotive, high-tech and healthcare? Is there a particular reason? Is that your strength compared to your competitors?
Let me start from the region, sub-regional perspective, and then I'll dive into the Malaysian part. From APAC and from Southeast Asia perspective, you're right. We have focused a lot on a few verticals because that's where our competencies and capabilities are built over the time period. For instance, if you look at Malaysia, we are heavily focused on automotive and high-tech industries. We have, to the extent that for large automotive, global automotive players, we do have specific comprehensive in-house warehousing and including services like pick and pack, SKD, sub-assembly, optimized door-to-door transport. So we have over the years built up a reputation and niche in these verticals. When it comes to the other one, which is basically retail or luxury goods customers, Geodis has a very clear and deep understanding of handling the challenging logistical needs of these customers, especially in these sectors. One is, of course, the fact that you need a very high level of accuracy in terms of managing the shortages, product tagging and delivery, because these are all high valued goods and they come with a very stringent SOPs. So not every player can implement the supply chain for these retail customers very seamlessly. And having said that, I think, as I said, one of our key strengths has been focusing on this retail segment. And we built very strong capabilities, not just on the warehousing and domestic transportation, but also in terms of managing the inbound and outbound movement of these of the goods, especially in the luxury retail customers. We provide that niche to these customers, and hence they keep coming to us because they see us performing and winning with more businesses in this segment.
Okay, so I'm curious then, since there is this requirement to deliver the goods on time, and since you manage the inbound and outbound and the high value goods, how have you had to navigate the different regulations in countries, or perhaps the sudden lockdowns like what we see in China, which still pursues a very strict zero COVID policy? For example, the port city of Shenzhen was closed briefly in March. Then in Zhengzhou, a gateway for air freight also limited the movement in May. It cannot be easy, especially, let's say, China. It's the factory of the world. It's home to also 7 of the world's 10 biggest container ports, but can close suddenly. So what has Jodis done, or how have they managed to navigate this?
China is not a part of my portfolio.
Yeah,
I manage the Southeast Asia business. Yeah, but it does have a big impact on the business in Southeast Asia. So from our perspective, as I said before, we have introduced and invested a lot on air capacity. Because as you rightly said, the imbalance of equipment and the port congestions had led to delays in the ocean freight movement. Mm. Combined with the air freight, what we've also done, we've also introduced the multimodal between road and rail. So our Jodis Road network connects efficiently across all the ASEAN countries. And then we've also used the rail as an option from Vietnam and Cambodia to connect into China. So in a way, we have used alternative solutions, which has helped us tide over some of the border crisis, especially in terms of delays because of the strict measures in China, especially related to zero COVID tolerance. And that's kind of helped us mitigate a lot of these delays for our customers. But again, it is an ongoing challenge. It keeps coming and going. So it's not, I don't see a solution in the immediate future. But we have at least a clear action plan in terms of navigating through these challenges.
So it keeps you nimble, doesn't it? Now, interestingly, I read in the 2021 financial report of your parent that Jodis results were exceptional due to the favorable price impact and air freight volume. But if I use dry bulk index as a gauge of freight rates, all right, might not be the most accurate. July 2021 was the peak, but it has dropped by 60% since then. Now, is this going to be a challenge because your prices have been on a declining trend, but yet cost pressures have been on an upward trajectory, right? So oil prices are up 40% on a year-to-date basis. Manpower cost has gone up. So is it tough times? Do you see a margin squeeze for Jodis in Southeast Asia?
No, actually, because a lot of this, I agree with you that air freight prices are hardening over the period. It's not the same level as it was before. And we see with the introduction of capacity in the market, we see the rates coming down gradually. But again, it has not still reached the levels of 2019. So it's still going to take some time to go there. But when it comes to ocean freight, I think the situation is still the same. Actually, the price has actually gone up, as you rightly said, over last year because of the huge imbalance in terms of the equipments and and blank sailing and whatnot. So that trend is likely to continue for some more time. And most of this cost increases has pushed us to give innovative solution to our customers like consolidations. So previously, there used to be a lot more transactions on an individual basis. So now what we tell customers is to consolidate and then use our products, whether it's AirFlex or AirSafe, depending on the transit time requirements, whether it's intercontinental movement or movement within the Southeast Asian sub-region. And that's kind of helped them plan better and manage their movement better. Also, coupled with that, as I said, the multimodal has actually option has really helped our customers a lot in terms of deferring some of those not so critical movement. So they can plan it better, and then gives us that opportunity also to give them a far more price advantage compared to an expensive air option or the ocean option. So the combination of all these three modes has really helped customers a lot. On top of that, and in terms of saving, the unit costs are going up, but overall cost has been managed quite efficiently. But your next question on the labor costs,
yes.
Of course, as I said, the volumes are growing and so is the labor cost. But we have consistently introduced a lot more mechanization in our warehouses. And that's kind of helped us in terms of keeping some of the costs under check. If you ask me, the margin percentages are slightly coming down, but overall absolute margins are improving year on year because of the sheer revenue quality going up. So that's helping companies to do well financially.
All right. But are you also reluctant then to pass on the rising cost to consumers? And is this the customers? Is this due to the competition from the likes of DHL, Global, KNN and Seva? Because I from what I gather, it is a competitive field.
Of course, end of the day, the price is always market driven. So you know, you can choose to price whatever you want to the customer, but the customer always has the choice. So we are very conscious in terms of what cost to pass to the customer, what not, and we balance it out between a combination of price rise and efficiency improvement in the operations.
Okay, and are you concerned about global growth? Because the noise is that it's slowing. The US might slip into a recession. And with that, we should see declining trade. And let's face it, your business is all interrelated with trade, right? So we just got over one crisis, which was the pandemic. Are we heading for another?
Well, yeah, of course. If you read the various news, every you know, there is a bit of uncertainty in terms of the future, whether it's predicted recession in the US or some of the other challenges which is coming across, especially the Russian-Ukraine crisis impacting the movements of goods from different continents into Europe. But having said that, I think going back to your question, we have not witnessed any decline in growth, at least in Southeast Asia at this moment. We are growing at the same pace at which we are growing in the last few months. So that's the positive sign of it. But we are conscious about how this market can quickly change in the future, and we will be taking necessary initiatives to ensure that we, more importantly, take care of the customer's requirement in those challenging times.
To talk about sustainability, because your parent, SNCF, is committed to encourage low carbon mobility to help France achieve its carbon neutral goals by 2050. But realistically, can this be achieved when Geodis itself is a transport and logistic company? I mean, what steps are being taken to decarbonize the freight transport chains, be it air, sea, rail and road?
Okay. If you look at it from the global perspective, we have made statement that our CO2 emissions will be reducing by 30% in 2030 over the 2017 base numbers. And this is a changing number. This is a changing target, right? And we will be, and we have been ramping up implementation of low carbon and carbon-free transport solutions to our customers. That's been quite consistent over the years.
What about here in Southeast Asia, though? Is it the same?
In Southeast Asia, we have started the exercise, honestly, if you ask me, in terms of some of the plans. But I think in Europe, it's far more ahead compared to APEC, not just for us, for everybody.
Yes.
Because the legislations are far more stringent in Europe compared to APEC. The other thing is, in Southeast Asia, going back to your question, what we're doing is we've already started investing in green buildings in some of the investments that we've done now for our multi-user facilities. They all come with green facilities. We will also be, in different parts of the region, we do have customers insisting on electric vehicles for last mile delivery. So we have introduced them. But what we are looking at is consistency in terms of rolling out our global initiatives across all the countries in a very phased manner, that's been done in a very methodical way.
On that note, thank you for your time on The Breakfast Grill. Was Venkateswaran Laksmanan, the Sub-Regional Managing Director of Southeast Asia at Geodis. I'm Wong Xiaoning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, where unlimited potential begins.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.